The message the Lord has given this morning is more on a sobering topic, the nature of the beast. I'd like to start out with giving a few examples. We'll start out with knowing that the enemy is interested in killing, stealing, and destroying. That's his business, and that is his plan for you. And he knows you well. He knows your propensities, because we all have different ones. We all have different temptations. And he knows just how to play in your life. So I'd like you to recognize the nature of the beast. I'm going to start out with some physical examples. I want to introduce you to a man named Tim Treadwell. Tim Treadwell loved a grizzly bears. He studied them, he documented them, he took pictures of them, he videoed them, he lived among them. His natural place of habitation was in California, but then in the fall time, he would go up to Alaska, the place that he went was remote enough that a plane would have to take him in. And he would set up camp and watch the bears. He called them by name. They were his friends. He loved the bears, the grizzly bears. So he would camp and study them and document them. And he was there for a couple of weeks. And then the pilot would come in, pick him up, and take him back to his home in California. He did that for many, many years. And they were his friends. And he actually would play with the cubs. And he would pet them. But he forgot the nature of the beast. He forgot that he was dealing with animals. And one year he decided to go up there, and he took his girlfriend with him. 2003, I think it was. When the pilot came in to pick him up, he waited and waited, and there was no Tim Treadwell. So he went in search of him and found his remains and found a video camera that had been actually on when his life was taken by the bears. He had forgotten the nature of the beast. He had petted them. He had played with them. But it took his life, because he forgot that they are bears, and that they are hungry, and that they aren't your friend when they're hungry. And I've thought of that a lot, because he had made the brag that I would love to be eaten by a bear one day, because he just had no fear of them. And he was. But they say the scream that was on that recording, he was begging for his life. He did not want to go that way because he forgot the nature of the beast. So I'd like to go on to another story of a few years ago. A woman, her chimpanzee had got out. His name was Travis. That was her baby, she called him. And Travis had got out, and Travis was a friendly chimp, and he would ride in the car with them. He would go to town with them. Everybody in town knew Travis the chimp. And Travis the chimp would drink wine with them, would watch television with them. That was her baby, Mrs. Harold's baby. She loved him. She had raised him from when he was just tiny. And that was her baby. And he got to acting aggressive, and she had given him an anxiety pill of some sort in his tea to help him with that. But it may have made him more aggressive. They're not real sure what happened. But he was used to unlocking doors, and so he got out. And so she had called her friend, Charla Nash, and she said, "Would you please come and help me with Travis? I'm having trouble with him, and he's out. So we need to get him." And when Charla got out of the car, Travis attacked her and did not take her life, but Mrs. Harold came out with a butcher knife and actually was stabbing the chimp, but he never could stop. He was still a beast. She had forgot the nature of the beast. It disfigured this woman greatly, and there was a lot of news articles about that, ripping off different things. And I thought about that, and I thought, you were still entertaining an animal. It wasn't your baby. Even though it had many qualities that reminded you of a child, it still was a beast. You were entertaining an enemy in your house, so to speak. So then we'll go on to this year, in the early part of the year. A young man, Daniel Brandon was his name, and he had a pet python, and it was out of the cage, and he was playing with it, and the mother was downstairs, and she heard something drop on the floor, and she went up to check it out, and it was Daniel, and he was dead. And the python had become frightened, apparently, and went under the bed. And by all accounts, the python had strangled him. And I thought, you know, that was his pet snake. And she said, this was his baby. You know, that word baby comes into mind. She had raised him, this python. He had raised the python since that python was just small enough to fit in his hand. But it's still the nature of the beast. See what I'm saying here? And I think sometimes we don't understand. Now, these are all physical animals, but we deal with an enemy, and sometimes we flirt with that enemy, and we entertain that enemy and call it a baby, when that enemy still has a nature that's to kill, to steal, and to destroy. And I think sometimes we overlook that because we give it too much room in our lives. That's what I'm going to say. So I want to give example of that. Let's go to Genesis, the third chapter. Eve listened to the beast. But Eve did not know the ferocity of this beast and what it was going to cost her. But she entertained and she listened. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? So he was starting to reason with her. Starts out with a question. And she is pulled in by his conversation, by his words. No doubt there was something very alluring and beautiful about this serpent. We only know them as snakes now, but there had to have been something beautiful, because I can't imagine a snake sitting in a tree and Eve being attracted to that to talk to it. I just know a woman enough to know that's not going to happen. But after the curse, it became something very different. But it said it was more subtle than any beast of the field, and it had been used by the enemy to draw Eve. And Eve was attracted. Eve was captivated. Eve was intelligent. And she said, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die, for God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And when the devil has a forked tongue, and he'll tell one thing that's right along with the truth. And it almost sounds like that sounds right. The entertainment of that. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat, and all gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of them both were opened, or they were changed. Something happened. Something happened in that garden, and it's because she did not truly recognize the nature of the beast. She entertained something that was very dangerous, and it caused them to sin by disobedience. The fruit looked good. The serpent's words were part truth, but part lie. And she was so captivated by the beauty of the situation that this animal is, or this serpent is talking to me. Maybe she was flattered by that. But that is the tool of the enemy. And she didn't recognize the nature of the beast. I'd like to go to 1 Kings, the 3rd chapter. And we consider this man, he is considered the wisest man of all. 1 Kings 3 and 5. And in Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give thee." And Solomon said, "Thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go in or to go out or come in. And I look at that and think, Solomon, you said all the right words. You understood exactly where you were at. You knew that in yourself you were nothing, and you needed something more than yourself. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy so great a people? And the speech pleased the Lord, and Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, because thou hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I think of that, oh, wise Solomon. But even wise Solomon didn't know the nature of the beast. He did not. And he started treading in areas that had been unlawful, that had been against God's commandments. And if you'll go, and it's scary to think that it's just 5 pages over in the Bible. How much time has elapsed? Of course, this is a young Solomon, and it does say Solomon was old. So there's a lifetime there of adulthood that he performed well for the Lord. But there's something started changing in a very gradual form because he did not recognize the nature of the beast. And it says, chapter 11, but King Solomon loved many strange women. Do you know the enemy knows your appetites? The enemy knows the things that you long for. And he knew Solomon's. And in that second verse it says, of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, a commandment, ye shall not go in to them, neither shall they come in unto thee, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. And Solomon clave unto these in love. That propensity that he had. In the fourth verse it says, in the last of the third verse, and his wives turned away his heart. And you know why? Because he failed to recognize the nature of the beast. They were his sweethearts. They were his wives. They were his cuddle bugs, if you want to call it that. They were his princesses, 1,000 of them. And it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. And do you know how that happened? Because he failed to recognize the nature of the beast. And I've thought of that. How did that progression happen? Did the first one was from Pharaoh, the daughter from Pharaoh. So when he brought her home, did she start crying? I miss my people. I miss my house. I miss my gods. And he thought, oh, I'm tired of hearing her crying. Let's just build an altar. That'll just suffice for now. And then others that brought in. And then did it ever start looking like, well, that's not such a bad thing? Well, apparently it did. It was a progression of time. Because it says in his old age, those wives turned his heart. And you know, his heart was perfect towards God in the very beginning. And I think of that, and I thought, you know, that's the nature of the beast. That's to kill, to steal, and to destroy. How much more wonderful if we could have had a different recording of the end of his life. But it wasn't the same. And it caused great grief for the children of Israel. I'd also like to go to Matthew, the 27th chapter. No, that's jumping ahead. Let's start with John, the 12th chapter. Let's do John, the 12th chapter. Jesus had come to Bethany. Mary had anointed him. But in the fourth verse it says, "Then saith one of his disciples," a disciple, a man chosen by Jesus, that's heart was right. Or Jesus would have never chosen him. His heart was right. He was in the presence of the Son of God. He was able to be there when Jesus fed the thousands. He was able to be there when he healed everyone. He was there when there was a Sermon on the Mount. He heard those blessed words. He was there. I look at that and think, you were there, Judas. And Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? Once again, that's like a little forked tongue. Why wasn't this sold and given to the poor? And then he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bare what was put therein. And if he was a thief, how much had he taken out of that bag? But he was only concerned about how she spent her money. She wasted it all over the Lord. And that could have been given to, or I could have put it in the bag and I would have stolen it. Because he didn't know the nature of the beast that he was entertaining in that greed. And it does go on to describe in the 13th chapter and the 2nd verse. And the supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. The devil has now got freedom in Judas's life. And you know what? Judas didn't know the nature of the beast. It's only after everything started happening that he realized that the roll of events that was opening up, that he realized what he had done. The nature of the beast. And yet, even at that point, he could have turned around and repented. Peter did. Judas could have repented. But there was something in him that maybe it was pride. Maybe it says, I won't go back on my word. I've already done enough. I'm not worth anything. There's an enemy that seeks to steal, to kill, and destroy you. So beware of the nature of the beast. So if you will go with me now to Matthew, the 27th chapter. This recording here says, "Then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned and that I betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, what is that to us? See thou to that. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went out and hanged himself." He did not recognize the nature of the beast. He did not recognize, and it took his life. It took his life. The nature of the beast won that one. But he didn't with Peter, and I'm thankful for that. But Jesus was in the presence of that same beast, and he recognizes the nature of the beast, and he defeats it. So let's see how he did that. You will turn to the fourth chapter of Matthew. Jesus was, in all points, tempted like as we are, yet without sin, because he recognizes the nature of the beast, and he knows how to defy him, and he knows how to resist him, and to overcome. In the fourth chapter, then was Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward and hungered. And when the tempter came to him, he said, okay, so the tempter did not come on day number one. He didn't even come on day number 20. He came when Jesus was hungry. Do you know that's when the enemy, that's the nature of the beast, is to get you when you're weak and hungry, and he knows your appetites? So he starts out with saying, if thou be the Son of God, at once a forked tongue. He's saying two things here, because he knew he was the Son of God. Command that these stones be made bread. Do a little magic trick here. Show us some of your power. But he answered and said, and this is how to resist. It says to resist the devil and he will flee from you. There are times you are physically going to have to do that in your spiritual life. You're going to have to say, and it said, it is written. Now, how did Jesus defeat the enemy? Every time he defeated him was by the word of God. It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeded out of the mouth of God. And the devil taketh him up to an holy city and setteth him on a pinnacle. And he said, if thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down. So once again, it's a forked tongue. He's going to tell you part of the truth, but there's going to be an underlying part that's sin and death. He shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against a stone. So even the devil is quoting some scripture here. But he's doing it with a forked tongue, if thou be the Son of God. If you're really a child of God, you wouldn't have reacted that way. How many times have you been tormented with that? And that's because it's the nature of the beast to draw you out, to discourage you, to kill, to steal, and to destroy, to stomp you under his feet. He's a bully, and that's all he is. Jesus said unto him, it is written again, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. And again, the devil taketh him to an exceeding high mountain and showeth him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. And he said, these things I will give thee. Who had the power to give them? The devil? No. No. He only has power in people's lives. That's all. If they will let him. If thou wilt fall down and worship me. And said, get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. There are times we have to be aggressive in this journey that we're on the way to heaven with, and that is to resist the devil, and he will flee. And says, then the devil leaveth him, and behold, angels came and ministered unto him. And there was a wonderful testimony that's in John, the 14th chapter. Jesus was here. He was tempted in all points, and we can be sure of that, yet without sin. But he had this testimony of himself, John, the 14th chapter and the 30th verse. Hereafter I will not talk much with thee, for the prince of this world cometh and hath nothing in me. He has no claim in me. He has 0% of my life. He has 0% of my time. He has 0% of my thoughts. He doesn't have anything in me. There is nothing he can claim. And that's a wonderful testimony. If we can say to the world, the enemy has nothing in me. But too many times, we're petting it. We're holding it in our hand and calling it baby. We're calling it Travis, or whatever name that we're bound to find. We're calling it, it's not a big deal. It's not harmful. And yet we're petting something that could destroy us. In James, the first chapter, it gives kind of a recipe, if you will say, for how this happens. It says, but every man, when he is drawn away of his own lust and is enticed, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. So those propensities I was talking about, we all have them. We are all in the human form. We all need to admit we need a Savior to help us out. And then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. What it's saying here is know the nature of that beast and don't tread in his yard. Don't tread in his territory. Don't give a thought to what he wants to do in your life. Don't entertain it. And many times when we are drawn of our own lust, we're in his territory. That's what that means. I've allowed my thoughts, I've allowed my actions, I've allowed something to take up where Christ should have been. And I've allowed it, I've petted it, I have fed it, I have taken it out of the cage and played with it, so to speak. And what it does is it will turn on you and it will kill you. It will destroy you. It will mangle you. It will disfigure you. That's why it said every man is tempted. But it also said in the 12th verse, so there's the hope that we have. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation. For when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Jesus was tempted. We will be tempted. The sin is not the temptation. The sin is the entertainment of the temptation. I desire that you pray for me. This has been a challenge to me. I want you to know the enemy is here to kill, steal, and to destroy. But it says he is a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. It didn't say who he will devour. But you're going to have to give that leeway. I desire you pray for me.